are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna do?
you gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all? Yeah.
The government cares about
they
you.
They ain't giving up a second thought about you. No. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me. With your life
running like a red disease,
I'm running like a red disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself. Yo. You got to learn to love yourself. Ghetto people.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotel family, hope everything is well for you today. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you wanted to do, should do, must do, can do, will do. And I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But I know if it wasn't, you got it done anyway. Because I love that perseverance in you. I love that stick-to-itiveness. I'm going to get it done regardless. We need that. We need that as a people. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. If you cannot listen to this program live, you can go to the archives at timeforanawakening.com. Look for podcasts. Click on that, then look for African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be the programs that are dated and titled. As I stated, we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. All times are going to give it Eastern times. Immediately following this program is the Black People Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones. Every Monday and Wednesday, the Black People Matrix from 1 to 3 with Brother Franklin Jones. In the evening, Monday evening, 6 p.m. to 8 with Brother Hohad, it is Acres of Diamonds. And then after that, Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. And then after that is Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. Then Wednesdays, from 8 to 10, is Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness, Revive. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. on Thursdays. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, oh, yes, right, brothers and sisters. You know what time it is. It's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it's not me. You know it ain't me. It is Sister POC and her program, Revive, on Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Sunday evening at 7 p.m., once again, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Last night's guest was Dr. William Rogers. And Dr. Rogers, an outstanding job and good call-ins. Brother Joe and and, of course, my brother Jay and so forth. Good information. Brother from Canada called. Some good information. So every Monday through Friday here on Time for an Awakening Media from 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m., it is the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com. Go online and look at the products that WeBuyBlack.com has. WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from WeBuyBlack.com. It is the largest online marketplace for American African produced and disseminated products is WeBuyBlack.com. We are the only. We're not only a global market for American businesses, we're a movement for economic empowerment. And remember, I said to you that WeBuyBlack.com wants to open up a supermarket here in the Atlanta area. They've solicited a number of brothers and sisters, and I think it was like 14,000 brothers and sisters gave some money. They collected over $400,000. Their goal was $1.2 million. So you can see there's still a lot of way. Excuse me, y'all. There's still a long way to go. And I hope they reach that goal. We need it. But not only we need it here in Atlanta, we need it everywhere. Every major city where we are, we should have that. And we should be working with American African farmers or produce producers to sell their products in our store. Every product that's in the store should be American African owned or distributed, whatever the products are. WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans, Brother Mamani Tayembe, he'll be coming back. In fact, he's coming back today, December 2nd, from South Africa, from Johannesburg and Cape Town. Can't wait to hear how it all went. He's leaving again the end of this month, December 24th to January 4th. So please do check him out. The trip to Ghana, December 24th to January 4th, is only $3,700. And there is room available. Give Brother Bamani a call at 404-931-9429. And or go online to AfricaForTheAfricans.org. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Also, to Dr. Runoko Rashidi, Dr. DRRUNOKO.com. Dr. Runoko Rashidi, Dr. Runoko. Runoko is going to three countries next month, January 21st through February 4th, and that is going to Senegal, Gambia, and Guinea-Bissau. This trip is only $3,800. Bargain. He's going to three countries. And not only that, in Senegal, you'll have an opportunity to visit the radiocarbon date laboratory established by the great scholar, historian, warrior scholar, Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop. So it is a great trip. Please go online, look at the itinerary, look at the things that you're going to be able to do. It's a great trip. Shrine of the Black Madonna, as they're getting ready for Kwanzaa. Kwanzaa is coming up at the Shrine of the Black Madonna, and I'll get that information. We definitely need to know what's going on with Kwanzaa. And the hours for the shrine, located in the West End on Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard, is Wednesday through Saturday, 12 to 7, and Sunday, 1 to 3. They're closed Monday and Tuesday. And they also have an African Holocaust Museum. They have everything you need. They got furniture. They got clothing. They got artwork. They got the red, black, and green Nagash shoes. They got Kwanzaa kits, Kwanzaa candles, all these kinds of things for you. They have books. If there's a book that you're looking for that they don't have, believe me, they'll find it and they'll get it for you. The Shrine of the Black Madonna. They also have a history class, an African history class, Know Thyself. Brother Olatunji does an outstanding job of instruction. It is open every Saturday from 1:30 to 3:30. Every Saturday, open to the public. It's free and open to the public, 1:30 to 3:30. And if you cannot deal with that, brothers and sisters, they got something for you. But you want that information? They have a multimedia library that is now 7 terabytes of African enlightenment, over 15,000 video files, over 15,000 images, over 20,000, over 40,000 audio files, and over 2,000 books. All kinds of good stuff located in that video file in the African history. So, also, too, we promote Medu Bookstore, and our sister, it is her anniversary coming up. I saw that online at the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, located right next to the kiosk. If you're at the kiosk of We Buy Black, you turn right or turn left, whichever the direction you're facing, and you'll see the Medu Bookstore right there in the Greenbrier Mall in Lithonia. Open hours are Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 and Sunday from 12 to 6. And the number to call is 404-463-3263. 404-463-3263. Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. I'll be working with Brother Jamu, Gazimdi Ajamu, my good brother, the proprietor of Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore, for his Kwanzaa presentation. And I've been blessed. He's asked me to participate, and I'm more than willing to do so. And I'll give you more details as that begins to unfold. 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. They also have the red, black, and green shoes, T-shirts, other paraphernalia, and, of course, books. And if they don't have the book that you're looking for, believe me, they'll get it. Cafe, nope, I apologize. ULU, Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa Cooperative Economics. Or as we like to say, family-centered economics. The Thursday night broadcast, every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. Number to call on Blog Talk Radio is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us. Brothers and sisters, go to the website, usliftingus.com. Become a member of the co-op. Imagine if We Buy Black worked with Us Lifting Us and other entities that are trying to do a co-op. We got the framework. We got it right there. Come on, let's do this collectively. But I know when somebody starts something, they want, you know, their stuff. They don't want to merge. They don't want to make it. You know, I don't want to lose my identity. I don't want to lose my possibilities of shine that I might get. The most important thing for it to do is to happen. And whatever way we can make it happen, that's what we should do. Akhmed Institute, of course, Sister Yah is having a Women's Day next week, Tuesday, December 10th. Next week, Tuesday, December 10th. That's going to be at the Akhmed Institute. Number to call is 404-753-7237. 404-753-7237. And African Warrior Women's Day lecture by Sister Yah and questions and answers. Also, too, you can listen to that program online on Facebook. So please, brothers and sisters, especially you sisters, that's what it's geared towards. Be a participant. Akhmed Institute, Brother Yah. I must still be tired. I'm going to tell you, but I apologize because I've been waking up and can't go back to sleep, man. So I must be tired. But I'm going to get it together. Here we go. Akhmed Institute. Brother Baruti and Sister Yah have been doing an outstanding job of educating our young people. But, of course, they need help, and your help is greatly appreciated. Send check or money over to Akhmed Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. That's Akhmed Institute, P.O. Box 10786, 30310. But if you'd like to use Cash App or PayPal, please do so. The dollar sign, Yah, Y-A-A, the letter M, and then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I, and make your contributions to Akhmed Institute. Sister Gabby Aurelia, who is in the northeastern part, in the rural part of Haiti, and doing outstanding work with our young people, educationally, health-wise, growing food, have a chicken farm, trying to be self-sustaining. Please, brothers and sisters, go online, and whatever you can do to help, please do so. Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E. Haiti.org. Sanjay-Haiti. Black Talk Radio Network. Black Talk Radio Network Projects Funds. I'm going to try to get Brother Scotty Reed on here. I'm going to give him a call and see what day is best for him. I talked to him briefly last week to talk about the fund and how it's going and what needs to happen to make it reach its goals. The Black Talk Radio Network, brothers and sisters. Well, I'm very proud to be on the network and we need to make sure that the network is sustained. Black Talk Radio Network 2019 Media Fund. The Inye Sasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Always some gems in the Inye Sasim. Baba Baruti put this together. It's just beautiful. December 1st. The success of the movement is going to depend very heavily on the number of people willing to sacrifice in giving some unpaid or not fully paid service. Chancellor Williams. Truly benevolent service is given without thought or personal gain. It is a consummate act of selfless love. There is no exception in a heartfelt contribution to the good of one's friends, family, or people, regardless of the sacrifice. Reciprocity is to be found in the benefit felt through one's great-great-great-great-grandchildren's empowerment. Benevolence is a prerequisite for any victory through the revolutionary force of a deposed people, because most often a deposed people are not in a position to spiritually, mentally, or materially elevate themselves in their own traditions while in the act of being revolutionary. Most often, disposed people are captives of their oppressors, religion, psychologically imprisoned in the thought process and reason of a mental cycle, self-negation, and or other evaluation, and without direct control over the resources necessary to claim independence. If any of those apply, if these people were spiritually solvent in and of themselves, if they saw themselves for who they were and thought accordingly, or if they had in their possession the physical means to self-sufficiency and self-defense, there would be no need for a revolution. Therefore, if we want liberation and sovereignty, and we must, and we better, we should invest all of our energy into sacrificial revolutionary action. Affirm, I am willing to sacrifice my labor to the African nation. I willingly sacrifice my labor to the African nation. Ashe. December 2nd. A lie is nothing for a liar to tell. Johnny Mayloy. It is one thing to lie. It is another to know the truth, but spawn even more lies to buy time because so many of those you oppress rightfully refuse to lose memory of your forked tongue as they find their way and discard yours. It is called impacted lies, the telling of more and more lies based on defending the uncorrected originals. When you have told so many lies on top of each other over the centuries, that telling the truth about one of your earlier fundamental lies would unravel all the lies that have been defensively piled upon on top of each other, thus exposing you for what you truly are. You have no choice but to continue to lie. When your ability to maintain your privilege and control over others' reality is based on the lies about what you are or who you are, you cannot tell the truth. So we must question, at what point do we begin to believe the truth of liars? If I had lied to you for 100 years, when do you start to believe I'm telling you the truth? When I again place my hand on a holy book? When I again swear to my mother's on my mother's grave? When I again cross my heart and hope to die? When I again say, look in my eyes? When I again write it in a contract, unless you have never stopped hoping that I would stop lying, you have no question when Western or Westernized tongues impart lies as truth. I have lied to you for 20, 50, 100,000 years. Will you ever believe me? I should hope not. Affirm. I do not give the truth of liars a second thought. Affirm, I do not give the truth of liars a second thought. Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Pre-Kwanzaa. Kwanzaa's coming up, brothers and sisters. This is the month of Kwanzaa, December 26th to January 1st. There are some pre-Kwanzaa events that are going to be happening. One, the Association for the Study of African Life and History, the organization of Dr. Carter G. Woodson. They're having a pre-Kwanzaa presentation that's going to be Sunday the 15th, and it's going to be from 3 to 5 in East Point, at the East Point Millennium United Methodist Church, 2651 North Church Street in East Point, Georgia. And that's going to be from 3 to 5. Come celebrate with them. That is the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History, or African Life and History. I'm thinking about, but now you know I love me some Carter G. Woodson, just like Dr. Clark. I love them. I love those men. So that's going to be a free event. Also, too, in the Pittsburgh community here in Atlanta, there will be a Kwanzaa celebration on the 14th, Saturday the 14th. I will get details on that and be announcing that, and I hope to have the esteemed elder, Dr. Mariba Kelsey, here with me, 94 years old. I mean, that brother is strong. 94 years old. I tell you, it's beautiful. I can't wait. So I'll be contacting him to get that date down. I'll let you know. It'll be early next week. Dr. Kelsey, esteemed elder in our midst. Saw this, and I had to save this. This was a good piece here, and I'll be saying this from time to time, although it had a picture of El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz, Brother Omawali, Brother Malcolm X. I'm not sure if this quote is truly attributed to him, but it's a deep piece, y'all. You know, once again, this program is about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. On this program, we believe there is no other way. There is no other solution. The only solution is for our people to embrace Pan-Africanism, embrace it to the fullest extent, and work hard to liberate African people on the continent throughout the diaspora. There is no way that there's no other alternative. Just like when I read that about what Sister Mirimba Ani says, we have to understand African thought and behavior. So we need to look at the European and his thought and behavior and understand that we have to reject that, because where he leads us is genocide. And we continue to believe that somehow, some way in this system, he'll have a damn epiphany and change his mind and change his behavior and treat us with the respect and dignity that I know we all deserve. But when you're in a system as a beggar, you get what you deserve, and that's crumbs. The saddest part, this is the quote, the saddest part about our situation is that as a culture of people that changed the world, we are culture of people that changed the world many times. In the ancient world, there's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it that people came from far and wide to sit at the feet of African people for literally hundreds, if not thousands, of years. And we didn't diss them. We didn't turn them away. That is not who we are as a people. And we didn't go somewhere. Maybe we secured boundaries. We had to do that. But we didn't go over someplace and take somebody's stuff and eliminate them, decimate them. We didn't make them learn our history, learn our culture, learn our language, learn our religion. We didn't do none of that.
The saddest part about our situation is that our culture of people that changed, we are the culture of people that changed the world. Now, has to be the same people who brought about their downfall. Now has to be, now we have to beg. We have to beg the same people who brought about their downfall. The same people who raped their ancestors. The same people who robbed them of everything. We have to beg them for a job, for a house, for an education, and even for the right to live. Tell me, where is the honor in that? There is no honor. We've been deuced to a people who are beggars. Who are beggars. I'll continue to put forth that agenda, to put forth that particular paradigm, because it really is the only one that we must have. I'm not, this is not Oshi, okay? I don't give you my opinion. I'm not coming on here because my opinion is profane. I'm not giving it to you. I'm giving you information based on the scholarly work of our scholars. Our scholars, our historians, our elders, our ancestors. I'm giving you that. If you don't like it, too damn bad. But it is the only thing that we must embrace. Everything else to try to deal with the European, it will be failed. I'm going to talk today about the attack on African men, the feminization of African men, of African people. As you know, the European, looking at the history, once again, as Malcolm said, of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research, and look at the history, and you'll see that Europeans have tried to impose a deviant and perverted lifestyle, sexual lifestyle, on the world. Not just on us, on the world. When Europe came, when the so-called Greeks came into Kemet to study at the feet of our people, one of the things that they did not understand is the complementarity that we as African people had for each other. We understood that men needed women and women needed men. We understood that. And we held each other in high regard. In ancient Kemet, a woman had freedoms. She wasn't suppressed. She wasn't held down. She was held in high regard and high esteem. In fact, in the African society, it is the matrilineal line that is revered and looked to, not the patch, but in Europe, in Caucasians, is hardcore male dominance, hardcore patriarchal, hardcore. Men dominate, men rule, to the point in ancient Greece that they turned the women off because the men were lovers of themselves and pedophilia. Love of the little boys. Alienated the women. Turned them off. The women go to the island of Lesbos. Look it up. It's always been that problem with Europeans to impose a perverse and perverted and ugly sexuality, particularly on us. In the captivity of us, in that trade, there ain't no damn trade. Trade is, you got something, I got something, let's trade. No, that ain't it. In that captivity, see, that's what I'm saying. We must learn to say the right words. We must learn to say the right words and put the right connotations on them. Damn what Caucasians say.
Stop calling each other black. We ain't black, we African. Stop calling each other slaves. We ain't slaves, we were captives. Use the right words.
You know, I'm going to read this particular piece here. No, first let me play Francis. My good brother used to be called the Irritated Genie, Kamanthi. He has a nice piece here dealing with straight black pride. And it's not very, it's 15 minutes. But he's talking about the attack. He's talking about the attack of the homosexual community on Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. And I understand, that's why I'm saying, you know, I often said that if you're homosexual, you keep that to yourself. If you want to be a member of our struggle for self-determination and liberation and sovereignty, there is no homosexual plank. This ain't the damn Black Lives Matter damn movement. This is the African liberation movement. This is the African sovereignty movement. There is none of that. If you want to be homosexual, you be that and you keep that to yourself. I don't care who you sleep with. What consenting adults do in the privacy of their own home is their business. I put emphasis on consenting. I put emphasis on adults. And I put emphasis on privacy. That's your business. But if you come out here and be a member, or come out here willing to work for, then that's it. There ain't nothing else. And if you want to sleep with a man because you a man, you want to sleep with a woman because you a woman, you keep that to yourself. If you can't, you out. If you are espousing it, if you are promoting it, if you are pushing it, you out. This is straight black pride. And what they were, and the attack. As soon as our good sister, Frances Cress Welsing, died, because she understood that her whole purpose was to let us know the attacks that are happening to African people mentally, socially, psychologically, theologically, physically, whatever it is, the attack on the African mind and African being. So, give a listen.
Associate her teachings with being anti-homosexual, which they were. But the reality is, they looked and what they realized is, as long as that foundation, Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, is the foundational information our people get in when they get in, like the sister said, she read the book and she's learning. If you come into consciousness through that, you can never be pro-homosexual.
That's right.
Because she identifies it as a weapon against black life.
That's right.
But when you look at everybody who's serious, that comes out of the 90s, and is in this movement fighting today, it's not one of them that you'll find that was not impacted by Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. Which is why you don't find any of the serious ones being pro-homosexual. So what they realize is, when she dies, when she transitions, at the moment of it happens, we're going to undermine everything that she taught in her scholarship. Well, the object was to not talk about racism and white supremacy, but to discredit her so that they can usher in homosexuality. So what happened? Dr. Welsing passes on January 2nd, 2016. Okay, it wasn't 8 hours. It wasn't even 8 hours. After that, homosexuals started coming out on Facebook and assaulting her. Well, she said some good things, but she was homophobic and her scholarship wasn't that good and all this kind of stuff. So we were like, what's going on here? I mean, we didn't understand. Then we looked up who it was. We looked at the guy and saw he was a homosexual. He's standing there with another guy looking like they just got married. And so we're trying to figure out what's going on there. Then this other guy, Mark Lamont Hill, pops up. When Mark Lamont Hill pops up, he justifies the statement and the criticism that this homosexual is making of Dr. Wells. And it basically says, now this is the homosexual that came out and made these Jeffrey McComb. One day, he is a coon, but I'm sorry. Now here's what he says. Rest in peace, Dr. Wells, an amazing producer of discourse of African-centric thought around black family and community to whom Umar Johnson, Boyce Watkins benefit greatly. How do we honor the dead? Do we romanticize the best of them and negate their damaging acts and rhetoric? Or do we paint them whole by admitting the valuable contributions they made to thinking beyond deficit narratives of black life, while at the same time efficiently demonizing and distorting particular black lives, black women, and LGBT folk, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender. So he goes on to just start excoriating her, women who are not deferential to their men, and men and women who desire same-sex partners. She calls them European. Dr. Wells and others to the forefront of the community knowledge and production, drowning out much of the humanistic, research-based, and nuanced discussion of black humanity in a world of white supremacy. In honoring her, I must honor the truth as she told it, but I also must be honest and say that as a generation of slaveholders and racists had to die for some to be free, so do tyrannous voices of black radical ridiculousness. So this is how they're talking about Dr. Wells. And who comes in? Mark Lamont Hill. And he says, oh, he agrees with the guy, a more thoughtful and nuanced assessment than mine. So he said he agrees with what this guy's saying. So Umar Johnson said, hey, are you agreeing with this? And so then Mark Lamont Hill starts going at Umar Johnson, yeah, I agree with that. I think what he's saying is true. We can't just be glorifying. Here's our brother Umar. Why did you see the need to repost this negative thing about Dr. Panzerelli? I think we need to discard parts of the tradition that reinforce homosexuality. After that, the homosexuals go in. Here you see the dumb B, didn't know gays, blah, blah, blah. So now this becomes an all-out, yeah, that's how. So the homosexuals started a whole assault on Dr. Wells. So we started looking and saying, well, what's going on with this Mark Lamont Hill? Why is he doing this? We started doing the research. Guess what we found? In 2006, who was it that was out there writing that Malcolm X was a homosexual? Mark Lamont Hill. And we started researching. It's still online right now. You can go find it. He has a blog where he was saying that Malcolm X was a homosexual. He also talked about he had a good friendship with Dr. Khaled, but he had made some negative comments about Dr. Khaled. So basically, he's bled himself into being perceived as being pro-black, but he's a promosexual, homosexual, promosexual slash homosexual, pushing the gay agenda. And they were literally waiting. They couldn't even wait a week. It wasn't 8 hours. She hadn't even been given, taken to the morgue yet, probably. And now they're attacking her legacy to promote homosexuality. So, of course, we start going at this brother. Nah, I can't even call him brother now. Whatever he is, this promosexual slash this white sex offender is what we'll call him. And we start saying, wait a minute. You mean to tell me that Dr. Wells' work, even though she focused on racism and white supremacy, she wasn't even focused on the homosexual thing, but that she hit that thing so hard in advance that they feel the need to spit on the legacy of an ancestor in her grave. They not doing this while she's alive. Mark Lamont Hill had Huffington Post, CNN. He could have interviewed her anytime. He had decades to do it. Never wanted to talk to her while she was alive. I talked to Brother Neely Fuller about this, Dr. Wells' teacher. And what did he tell me? He said they're cowards. He said, yeah, they want to wait till she's gone. They will say that stuff, but they won't do nothing. They won't call me now. He said, I'm here. I'm ready for him. Then this Brother Neely Fuller, he don't usually talk. I've never seen him get that heated before. We were on the phone. He's like, I'm ready. Where they at? He said, yeah, they'll say that stuff when we gone, but I bet you they won't. That's his exact words. They don't want to tangle with us when we hit. He said, I'm ready to tangle. Where they at?
That's right.
I said, wow. So, and this is Mark Lamont Hill supporting this whole gay movement. So, what we have is a whole homosexual attack of Dr. Francis Crest Wilson. Because the homosexuals understand that strong black men and strong black women building families is the only thing that can fight white supremacy. But if you have strong black men and women together and they have children like our brother has his son there, he don't want no homosexuals in this room. If we invited homosexuals in the room, would you be here with your son, my brother?
No.
Yeah, what if we invited the pedophiles and told them we understand what's going on? You out?
No.
I got my son and daughter here. We don't want that stuff here. What about people that wanted, a Negro wanted to bring his white female wife? Would you want your son here with that?
No,
all right. I don't want my daughter here with that or my son here with that. So I know Brother Carbine about it. I know he said, no, sir, we can't do that. So what we are dealing with is a situation where the homosexuals know the only way they can get into our community and be perceived as black power or strong is to take the movement that Brother Malcolm, Brother Garvey, Elijah Muhammad, Ida B. Wells Barnett, Fannie Lou Hamer. She said, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. They want to change that. I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. I like being tired. I don't know. But it's very serious, because once we don't have what we have here today to talk about us coming together and protecting our community, once we no longer have that, and it's an open season where homosexuals can adopt our children, which they're doing now, where they can come in and force our children to learn to be gay in the classroom, putting dresses on our sons and daughters in the classroom. Literally, I mean, some of the stuff they're doing, I'm going to have to show you one day, because nobody here will believe me some of the stuff. I got a sister that went to the class and walked in at a preschool. Her son's 2 years old, 4 years, 4 years old. 2 years old. I think he's 4 years old. She walked in Oakland. And he's in a dress. No, he's in a tutu. He's in a tutu. And then, so I'm sitting there talking about what happened, and she just telling the story casually, and then she see my face frown up. She thought, yeah, I was mad, but you know, I didn't want to be perceived as ghetto, blah, blah, blah. So I didn't flip on him, but I told him, don't you ever do this again. And she said, they started telling her, well, at this age, we just let them explore. She said, they didn't have no trucks. They didn't have no male toys for the boys. All they had was plates and dishes and everything like that. And that's what her son says. She don't ever do this with my son again. So she comes back the next day to pick her son up. And the sister that she knows that had her children there too, she's like, tell me, would you believe they had my son in a tutu? She was all upset. You know what the sister told her? You should have been here the day before when they had him in a full wedding dress.
Oh,
yeah. So this is the kind of thing that's happening all around the country. And really, it's beginning all around the world. I mean, I'm hearing some of the stories out of Nigeria, East Africa, Southern Africa, and Brazil, the stuff that everywhere we are, they're pushing us on our people. And they understand they cannot do that if we're strong. So let me move one out here, because this is not really about me. I just want to show you. So what are they doing to our people? What they're doing is they got a movement now very similar to Barrett Rustin and the Civil Rights Movement. People don't realize there were three movements. The Freedom Movement, which was legit. Rosa Parks and Nixon and all those brothers, they were serious. That Montgomery bus boycott was serious. Then you had the Black Power Movement. That's Robert F. Williams, Mabel Williams, and all of that grew into the RNA, and the Black Panther Party and all that. Then you had a white-sponsored movement, which job was to undermine both of those movements, which was called the Civil Rights Movement. The people that we are taught are heroes were the ones that were paid to destroy the other movements.
Right.
The same exact players are in it now. The white so-called Jews who are controlling and funding the whole thing, we call them small hats. Who do they pay? Yesterday, it was the Uncle Tom. Now, we didn't know at that time, but many of those Uncle Toms were homosexuals. But on the forefront, they didn't come off that way. Gay Philip Randolph, homosexual. A lot of these guys were. Barrett Rustin was openly gay. He wasn't hiding it. James Baldwin, openly gay. Wasn't hiding it. But nowadays, they've replaced the undercover homosexual Uncle Tom trying to undermine our movements with a openly gay movement.
That's right.
That they are funding and financing. When you hear that Jay-Z's giving, $1.5 million?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To Black Lives Matter, that's the gay movement matters. That's the same individuals that are attacking Dr. Walton. Now let me show you. Now, I didn't make this. This is the founder of the Black Lives Matter movement, all right? Let's see what she has to say about what her movement is about.
What does queer mean to you? Queer, to me, is an umbrella term that incorporates folks who are outside of the heterosexual norm and the what we call heteronormativity, which is a big word for relationships, marriage. It's just between a man and a woman. It's the patriarchal family as we understand it. What's important to us in Black Lives Matter is that we are elevating and cultivating the leadership of folks who have not been included in the conversation. That includes Black trans women. That includes Black immigrant women, Black disabled folks, Black incarcerated and formerly incarcerated people. So to us, right, we're really trying to queer our movement. We know even in our tradition and our legacy of Black liberation that queer and trans folks have been in the leadership, however, have had to kind of cut pieces of themselves off because it wasn't acceptable. Baird Rustin being an incredible example of that. Audre Lorde being an incredible example of that, right? We want to create a different kind of movement culture. We think it's important. We think we need it. And we don't think that we can survive without it.
So I hear that, and I think, fantastic. The more, the better.
That's the founder of the Black Lives Matter?
That is the founder. The one that's getting all the money from the small hats, from those that are trying to undermine black male-female relationships and unity of our people, and literally trying to force-feed our children. Pure insanity. And they're trying to queer our children. They're not even, and the reason is, goes back to what Dr. Wells said, there's no manhood anymore. There was a time in the black community, the reason homosexuals didn't come out was not because what anybody was going to say. Brothers just picked their hands up and started busting upside the head. We didn't even understand how dangerous homosexuals. We just knew, shouldn't be around no children. We don't like the way you acting. Get out of here while you acting like that. Go get you some toughen up. We used to beat them up to try to, we ain't know how to fix it. But we was like, don't come around here with that stuff. Because it just ain't right. Don't feel right. You know what I'm saying? And we didn't want that in our community because we understood it was sick just by looking at it. Sisters wasn't having none of that stuff. Now, I haven't talked to a sister who responds aggressively to a lesbian hitting on her. She just is polite with it because it's so much have taken over the black female culture that sisters don't have the same aggression. And brothers, brothers acting more gay than the gays now. If you say something about homosexuality, brothers, I don't give that either. Like, why are you whispering? Listen, brothers, I seen brothers jump in the closet. I said, wait a minute, black man, you ain't the one supposed to be in the closet. Let him get back in the closet. But long story short, this is what Dr. Wilson was fighting. And so they even announced that they're going to shut our movement down.
Do we accept crack dealers in our community?
They came and tried to disrupt one of our events here. Who was here when they came here and tried to disrupt our event?
So your interests here are no longer useful.
We see what happens when they come and try to shut straight black pride down. Now she comes, we're doing a thing about school. Again, we're not even talking about homosexuality. We're talking about schools and how dangerous they are for our children. She come in talking some weird stuff that we already know about racism, and she do this long soliloquy.
When we say justice or else.
And then by the end of it, she comes around and starts talking about, yeah, but I think we need to be more accepting. Oh, accepting what? They actually went publicly, Black Lives Matter, and said, we are going to shut down every chapter of the Straight Black Pride Movement and everybody in it. That ain't happened, has it?
No, sir.
But I want people to understand that they have the objective of doing it. It's not that easy when you got men. And my point being, Dr. Wilson talked about manhood. When you have men, men are thinkers. We're not doing anything for you to come in here and shut us down. So if you try to come shut us down, we will shut you down. And we have the authority to do it and the rightness to do it because this is a peaceful assembly. Everybody feel like this is peaceful? So, but we also have men here. And we do a bunch of negotiations. Somebody come to do something. So people are safe in this environment. So I'm saying that to say that's what our community is missing. And what the homosexuals realize, if they don't allow this to grow, they can just come in and take the community. But as long as there are black men and black women who are going to stand with us men. Because see, we can't do nothing if the sisters don't support us. Because then the sisters just turn us in, and then we don't have any, we brother can't get no attorney. There's going to be a sister that's going to do that. A brother can't argue the case of what happened. A sister that's go up there and cry about what they did to us, and everybody get on our side. The black woman has the ability to justify black manhood or to do what too many sisters are doing, to justify homosexuality and the destruction of black manhood. Whatever the black woman rubber stamps is, what you're going to see more of. And so that's why they haven't been able to shut this down. They're not going to be able to shut it down because you see all the sisters in this room.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. That was brother, formerly known as the Irritated Genie. And we're going to take a break. We're coming up on that time. When we come back, we'll talk about a brother named Tyrone Hayes, a researcher. This appeared on Democracy Now! This brother has found out through scientific experiments and research through a pesticide that's everywhere that causes homosexuality. Dr. Tyrone Hayes. We'll learn more about him when we come back. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You stick with us. We will be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. The Godfather, James Brown, the big payback. That's what those folks who have done us so wrong definitely deserve. And I just believe in the law of reciprocity. You reap what you sow. What goes around comes around. I ain't going to waste time talking about revenge. I just want us to take care of us and do our thing. That's what's important. Other programs we have here on Time for an Awakening Media here on Mondays. My program, this program, is 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Immediately following this program is the Black People Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones every Monday and Wednesday. On Monday evenings, this evening from 6 to 8, is the Acres of Diamonds, Brother Wahad, and then followed by Let's Buy Black 365. After that, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. And then on Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And Wednesdays from 8 to 10, Proof of Consciousness, my sister, POC, with her program, Revive. And then on Thursdays, Relationship with Joy and Troy from 7 p.m. And then Friday at 8 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., once again, Revive with Sister POC. And then Sunday evening at 7 p.m. on Sundays, once again, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And then every Monday through Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m., it is the Warm Valentine Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We're talking about the feminization of the African man. This is global. Even Barack Obama tried to make a country say you must accept homosexuality if you want to get some funds from the U.S. You must accept this lifestyle. The sister who gave me my name, her husband was Nana Hochi. He lived here in Atlanta before he made his transition. I read something that he wrote saying that I looked at many African cultures, study many African cultures, nowhere in those is there homosexuality. In ancient Kemet, there is no medunetra, or what the Greeks called hieroglyphs, of homosexuality. There was always, particularly at the top, a man and a woman, a male and a female. A complementarity, a balance. Ma'at, the god Ma'at, was about truth, justice, righteousness, harmony, reciprocity, order, and balance. And that's what run this is, that's what ruled the society. It wasn't about homosexuality. But homosexuality is constantly promoted. It is a possibility that Pete Buttigieg, the homosexual mayor of South Bend, Indiana, may be the Democratic nominee. Now, it's not an issue for me,
because I never voted for a Caucasian in my life. So I ain't worried about it. I don't give a damn who the person is. I don't care who the person is, because I've stated many times unequivocally, whoever that person is, that person's objective, that person is directed to make sure that they help to maintain and sustain privilege that Caucasians have attained, that they created for themselves. I don't give a damn. That's what Barack Obama did for his 8 years. Oh, no, let him get through the first 4 years. You know, after that, then we can come and talk to him about some of the things that we should need. So I'm saying, this is the kind of evil within European society, within Caucasian society, that is perpetuated not just in Europe, but globally, wherever they are. And whatever they've done, they destroyed people. They destroyed cultures. They never brought, in the word civilization, there's a word in civilization, and the word is civil. They have never acted civil to any people they encountered, where they took their land, took their resources and eliminated them. If you didn't bow down to them and change who you were to fit them, then you were going to be eliminated. And of course, we know what happened to us in our captivity. And what happened to us even during your Arab captivity, making us eunuchs, cutting off our testicles. They just did it recently in Libya, so they could be sold to wealthy Arabs. There is no respect for African life. And I don't give a damn if nobody outside of us does. It is us who must develop the serious, healthy respect so we can be the kind of people that we must be. And based on our history and knowledge of self, our ancestors and what we have done historically, we must reclaim, recapture, and restore that. But the challenge is for us to even survive. As I read that piece to you, that I'll be reading periodically. This brother presented this information. This is from Democracy Now! And he says that the herbicide that he was doing the research on found out what it is doing, and they tried to discredit him. They even threatened him. So let us listen to Brother Tyrone Hayes from Democracy Now! This is some time ago. I believe it's February 21st, 2014.
Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We've been with you for 18 years as we turn to another story.
Yes, now we turn to the story of a University of California scientist who discovered that a popular herbicide may have harmful effects on the endocrine system. Tyrone Hayes was first hired in 1997 by a company that later became agribusiness giant Syngenta. They asked him to study their product, atrazine, a pesticide that is applied to more than half the corn crops in the United States and widely used on golf courses and Christmas tree farms. But after Hayes found results that the manufacturer did not expect, that atrazine causes sexual abnormalities in frogs and could cause the same problems for humans, Syngenta refused to allow him to publish his work. This was the start of an epic feud between the scientist and the corporation.
Now a new article in the New Yorker magazine uses court documents from a class action lawsuit against Syngenta to show how it sought to prevent the environment Environmental Protection Agency from banning the profitable chemical, which is already banned by the European Union. To start with, the company's public relations team drafted a list of four goals. Reporter Rachel Aviv writes, quote, the first was, quote, discredit Hayes. In a spiral-bound notebook, Syngenta's communications manager, Sherry Ford, who referred to Hayes by his initials, wrote that the company could prevent citing of TH data by revealing him as non-credible. He was a frequent topic of conversation at company meetings. Syngenta looked for ways to exploit Hayes' faults, problems. If TH involved in scandal, Enviros will drop him, Ford wrote. Well, for more, we're joined by TH himself. That's right. Tyrone Hayes is with us, professor of integrative biology at the University of California, Berkeley, joining us from the campus TV station right now in Berkeley. Welcome to Democracy Now! Can you tell us what happened to you, how you were originally tied to Syngenta, the research you did, and what prevented you from originally publishing it?
Well, here at Berkeley, I was a new assistant professor. I was already studying the effects of hormones and the effects of chemicals that interfere with hormones on amphibian development. And I was approached by the manufacturer and asked to study the effects of atrazine, the herbicide, on frogs. And after I discovered that it interfered with male development and caused males to turn into females to develop eggs, the company tried to prevent me from publishing and from discussing that work with other scientists outside of their panel.
What was the process within the company as you raised your findings? What was their immediate reaction to what you had come across?
Well, initially they seemed sort of supportive. We designed more studies, we designed more analysis, and they encouraged me to do more analysis. But as the further analysis just supported the original finding, they became less interested in moving forward very quickly. And eventually they moved to asking me to manipulate data or to misrepresent data. And ultimately they told me I could not publish or could not talk about the data outside of their closed panel.
And Professor Hayes, talk about exactly what you found. What were the abnormalities you found in frogs, the gender-bending nature of this drug, mm-hmm. atrazine?
Well, initially we found that the larynx or the voice box in exposed males didn't grow properly. And this was an indication that the male hormone testosterone was not being produced at appropriate levels. And eventually we found that not only were these males demasculinized or chemically castrated, but they also were starting to develop ovaries or starting to develop eggs. And eventually we discovered that these males didn't breed properly, that some of the males actually completely turned into females. So we had genetic males that were laying eggs and reproducing as females. And now we're starting to show that some of these males actually show, what we'd call homosexual behavior. They actually prefer to mate with other males.
And so where did you go with your research?
Well, eventually what happened was the EPA insisted that the Environmental Protection Agency insisted that the manufacturer release me from the confidentiality contract. And we published our findings in pretty high-ranking journals such as Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. We published some work in Nature. We published work in Environmental Health Perspectives, which is a journal sponsored by the National Institutes of Health.
And when did you begin to get a sense that the company was organizing a campaign against you? What were the signs that you saw post the period when you published your findings?
Before we published the findings and before the EPA became involved, the company tried to purchase the data. They tried to give me a new contract so that they would then control the data and the experiments. They actually tried to get me to come and visit the company to get control of those data. And when I refused, I invited them to the university. I offered to share data, but they wanted to purchase the data. And then they actually, as mentioned in a New York article, they actually hired scientists to try to refute the data or to pick apart the data. And eventually, they hired scientists to do experiments that they claim refuted our data, and then that escalated to the company, actually, Tim Pasteur in particular, and others from the company coming to presentations that or lectures that I was giving to make handouts or to stand up and refute the data, and eventually even led to things like threats of violence. Tim Pasteur, for example, before I would give a talk, would literally threaten, whisper in my ear that he could have me lynched, or he would quote, said he would send send some of his good old boys to show me what it's like to be gay. Or at one point he threatened my wife and my daughter with sexual violence. He would whisper things like, "Your wife's at home alone right now. How do you know I haven't sent somebody there to take care of her? Isn't your daughter there?" So eventually it really slipped into some, you know, pretty scary tactics.
So what did you do? I mean, you're actually, I mean, this is very serious. You could bring criminal charges if you're being threatened and stalked in this way.
Well, initially, I went to my vice chancellor here at the university. I went to my dean. I went to legal counsel here at the university. And I was told by legal counsel that, well, I was told, first of all, by the vice chancellor for research at the time that, well, you published the work, it's over. So I don't understand what the problem is. And I tried to impress upon her, Beth Burnside at the time, that, you know, that it wasn't over, that I was really being pursued by the manufacturer. And eventually, when I spoke with the lawyer here at the university, I was told that, well, I represent the university and I protect the university from liability. You're kind of on your own. And I remember I looked at him and I said, but the very university, from the Latin universitas, is a collection of scholars, of teachers and students. So who is this entity, the university, that you represent that doesn't include me? But clearly there's some entity that doesn't really include us, the professors and students, and doesn't really protect our academic freedom, I think, the way that it should.
I wanted to ask you about one of your critics, Elizabeth Whalen, president of the American Council on Science and Health. When the New York Times ran a critical story about the herbicide as part of its Toxic Water series in 2009, she referred to its reporting as, quote, all the news that's fit to scare. This is a clip of Whalen from an interview on MSNBC.
I very much disagree with the New York Times story, which is really raising concerns about a totally bogus risk. Atrazine has been used for more than 50 years. It's very, very tightly regulated. Even the Environmental Protection Agency, which is not known for soft-pedaling about environmental chemicals, even they say it's safe.
Well, it turns out that Syngenta has been a long-term financial supporter of Whalen's organization, the American Council on Science and Health, paying them at least $100,000. Your comments on her remarks?
Well, again, they're paid remarks. And one of the most disheartening things in this whole process is that many of my critics, you know, it's one to be academic if you come and say, well, we interpreted the data this way and we want to argue about this point. But these people really didn't even have an opinion. These opinions were written by the manufacturer and they were paid to put their names on them to endorse the opinions of the manufacturer. So, you know, that's one of the most disheartening things, that they were really just personalities for sale. And many of the things that she's saying there is just not true. There's any independent study from any scientist that's not funded by Syngenta has found similar problems with atrazine, not just my work on frogs, but I've just published a paper with 22 scientists from around the world, from 12 different countries, who've shown that atrazine causes sexual problems in mammals, and that atrazine causes sexual problems in birds, amphibians, fish. So it's not just my work in amphibians. And also with regards to the EPA, one of the scientific advisory panel members on the EPA that was supposed to review atrazine, turns out, is paid and works for Syngenta. So the whole process was tainted. And in fact, the EPA ignored the scientific advisory panel's opinion and actually decided to keep atrazine on the market and not to do any more studies, when that clearly wasn't the recommendation of the scientific advisory panel.
I wanted to go back to a second to your remarks about your university, because obviously there are many questions about major universities around the country being in some way or other supported financially by the pharmaceutical or the drug industry. But you're at a prestigious university. One of the top universities in the country at Berkeley. Do you have some concerns about how your university responded to your time of need and the attack on your academic integrity?
Well, they're not just my concerns. There are many at the university who fear that the university is just becoming a corporation. You know, we're a public university that used to get a lot more support from the state. In my lifetime, the tuition was free for students. Tuition's been rising, and it's really an effort to monetize things, and that includes scientific researchers. There's a lot of pressure on us not just to be scholars and to teach and to do research, but also to bring in funds that will support the university. So there's some sentiment from the university that if you are raising a concern potentially that it might cause the university to lose support or to lose funders, then you won't necessarily get the support on the campus that you need. And we've seen this over and over again. A colleague of mine, Ignacio Chapella, for example, was in a fairly huge battle over the same company, Novartis, and its influences over scientific research at the university.
Can you talk about the significance of Syngenta? First of all, is it a significant presence at the university at UC Berkeley? But also, the significance of Syngenta as a pesticide company and all that it makes. How powerful is it?
Well, when I was originally consulting for the manufacturer, they were Novartis at the time, and Novartis had a big influence on the campus. There was a major deal on the campus. I understand a fifth of the biological sciences support was coming from Novartis, and at the time, they both made pesticides and they made pharmaceuticals. One of my big concerns is that as of the year 2000, prior to the year 2000, the Novartis not only made atrazine, which is used on corn, of course, which is an herbicide, but it also induces an enzyme called aromatase. It causes you to make too much estrogen. And it's now been shown that this herbicide atrazine and this mechanism is potentially involved in development of breast cancer, for example. Up until 2000, the company also made a chemical called letrozole, which did exactly the opposite. It blocked aromatase, it blocked this enzyme, it blocked estrogen production, and this chemical letrozole is the number one treatment for breast cancer. So this company was simultaneously in 2000 making a chemical that induced estrogen and promoted breast cancer, and making a chemical that blocked estrogen production and was being used to treat breast cancer. So there's a clear conflict of interest there, a clear problem. The other problems are that something like 90% of the seeds that we use to produce our food right now are owned by the big six pesticide companies. So again, there's a conflict of interest where the companies have an interest in getting us addicted to the pesticides to grow the seeds that they also own. And Syngenta, of course, is one of those big six, one of the big pesticide or agribusiness companies.
And a New Yorker article that delves into your story also says that you came to find out that the company was also reading your emails. Could you talk about that?
Well, I had some suspicion that they had hacked into my email, and I originally found out there was a professor at Minnesota, and I was going there to give a big lecture, and this professor in the School of Public Health, Deb Dubinowski, said that she happened to be standing in line at the airport flying back to Minnesota, and just by coincidence, she was standing behind somebody who was having a conversation on his cell phone and who identified himself as an employee of Syngenta, and he made the statement, "We have access to his email, we know where he is at all times." So it wasn't just paranoia on my part. I had direct evidence that they had access to my email. And at the time, I maintained a second and a third email that I could keep private. And I actually used that information that they had access to my email to send them information and sometimes false information, for example, booking plane tickets through that email, because then I could send them to the wrong place so they wouldn't necessarily be there to follow me when I was going to speak in other places.
I mean, Professor Hayes, this is stunning stuff that came out in this class action suit. The suit wasn't brought by you, but the documents that came out that referenced you, Tyrone Hayes, T.H., and trying to discredit you, trying to discredit your family. That was a lawsuit that involved atrazine contaminating water supplies. But what was your reaction when you saw this? You suspected this. You felt you were being followed. You felt they were trying to discredit you. But now you have the documents.
Well, you know, it's funny. The way the article reads that, you know, I suspected. I mean, I knew Tim Pester. I knew Sherry Ford. I knew many of the individuals who were following me around. I knew who they were. I knew they had access to my email. So for me, I knew that these things were happening. This guy would directly come up and make lewd comments to me and threatening comments to me. But it was the kind of thing where, you know, it sounded like something out of a movie. I couldn't go and tell my colleagues, like, they're following me around and, you know, they're hacking into my email.
Put on a tape recorder?
You know, what I found, here's how I'll answer that question. What I found out that it was much more powerful for me to suggest and have them think that I recorded everything than for them to actually know what I recorded. And that actually became sort of my protection. So when this guy came up and threatened me and threatened my wife, to then go back and go, oh my God, did he record that or not? So it was much more powerful for me to have them think that. But you can see in their handwritten notes that they were very concerned that I was recording conversations. There's notes that they wanted to trap me, to entice me to sue, and these kinds of things. And my reaction now to see it all in the New Yorker and for, you know, all this open for the world to see is, there are two reactions. One is, I can't believe they wrote these kinds of things down, right? That you're plotting to, you know, investigate me and investigate my school and investigate my hometown and all these kinds of things, and you wrote it down. But my other response is, this is quite analogous to, you know, when you hear these stories of somebody who's been in jail for murder for 10 years and then the DNA evidence gets them out, you know, and they ask them, are you happy? And, well, of course I'm happy. But I've also been in jail for 10 years, you know what I mean? So, of course, I'm happy now that these documents have all been revealed, but it's also been a very difficult time for me for the last, and for my family, you know, for the last 10 or 15 years, for my students as well, for the last 10 or 15 years to be pursued this way and to be under a microscope this way and to be feel threatened this way for so long.
As we wrap up, what's happening with atrazine today? Where does it stand?
It's still on the market. We're still studying it. A number of studies are still coming out from around the world. One recent study has shown that male babies that are exposed in utero to atrazine, their genitals don't develop properly. Their penis doesn't develop properly, or they get microphallus. There are studies showing that sperm count goes down when you're exposed to atrazine. And this is not just laboratory animals or animals in the wild. This is also humans. We use the same hormones that animals do for our reproduction. And it's a big threat to environmental health and public health.
I want to thank you very much for being with us. Tyrone Hayes, a professor of integrative biology at the University of California, Berkeley, has devoted the past 15 years to studying atrazine, a widely used herbicide made by Syngenta. We'll link to the article in the New Yorker magazine that reveals how the company tried to discredit Professor Hayes after his research showed atrazine causes sexual abnormalities in frogs and could cause the same problems for humans. The article is called A Valuable Reputation, after Tyrone Hayes said that a chemical was harmful. It's made or pursued him. This is Democracy Now. We'll be back in a minute.
That was Brother Tyrone Hayes, who was at Cal Berkeley, who exposed the company that produced atrazine. And his research was proven correctly. There's another piece. I may play that at another date when we continue to discuss the feminization. Let me turn this off. Apologize about that. And, but the reality is, you should understand, brothers and sisters, that you should never quip about what these people are willing to do, the lengths they are willing to go, the diabolical and evil things that they have done and continue to do and will do to maintain and sustain the privilege that they have created for themselves at the expense of humanity. None of these things should surprise you. In fact, what it should do is cause you to think about everything else. Always pause and contemplate. Rationalize. Think of consequences and alternatives. We live in an evil world ruled by Europeans, ruled not by democracy or any other ideology. It is ruled by oligarchs. It's ruled by big money. It's ruled by the 1%. It's ruled by the people who have the ability to have their own army, their own security force, weaponry, you name it. That is a direct threat against all humanity. Here's an article I pulled out from the Pan-African Alliance. It's dated, what is this, a few years ago. The article is by Assad Malik. And the feminization of black men is soft genocide in action. Recently I tweeted, there has to be something behind the feminization of African manhood. This shit is disgusting. This is offhanded tweet that came from my observation of some men walking down the street who were as African and dark skinned as Wesley Snipes, with beard shadows, eyeshadow, wigs, and in women's attire. A few real men stood up in a support of the tweet. Shout out to Brother Wiseborn Allah. But people I didn't even know came out of the woodwork with comments like, "Fuck you and your constructive notions of black manhood. Yeah, sad, sexist, homophobic people, and feminization of black men, where you drop on your head as an infant, you just stupid. You were just born stupid." Normally, I wouldn't tolerate tweet mobbing, but light as my mission is. So it's time to bring this conversation, man, out of the closet. Excuse the pun, right? There is a direct relationship between the forced enslavement of captivity of African people into Caucasian society, the ongoing fear of African men by Caucasian men, the racist global system of European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege that we all live in, and the feminization of African men in Western society. The formula is simple. Emasculation plus effeminization minus education equals domination. This is the formula for the destruction of the African male in Caucasian societies. Let me say it again, because he's on point in this. Emasculate. To consistently put images out, notions and theories and all kinds of stuff against our African manhood. Effeminization, put you in dresses, constantly show you almost every actor. That's why you gotta love people who've challenged it. You gotta love Dave Chappelle. Dave Chappelle said, "I ain't putting on no damn dress. I ain't doing it. I do other characterizations, but I ain't doing it." And you see what happened to him. But it seems like all the others capitulated. They acquiesced. They threw a dress on. Some got ridiculous with it. Some is Flip Wilson and others, and Martin and Jamie Foxx, reoccurring characters, characterizations, and ugly characterizations. Effeminization. Minus education. If a person is not going to treat you right, how do you expect them to teach you right? It's not going to happen. And so that is the formula for the destruction of African manhood in Caucasian's reality. Exposing the weapons of European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege is not an attack on homosexuality. Instead, it's not an attack on homosexuality. Instead, it is an effort to expose social engineering as a continuation of strategies to neutralize the African man and dissolve the integrity of the African family. If you do not have strong men, you will not have African family. And vice versa. We need each other. Feminization is soft genocide. Feminization means to make a male like a female. They're a male in the physical sense, but no longer live, think, or act as men. They are emasculated. Emasculating a population is more effective and less politically damaging than hard genocide. Hard genocide is the immediate removal. Slow genocide or soft genocide is that it's happening, continues to happen. More and more of it is happening. Some think that ain't nothing's happening, but it's happening in front of them, right before their eyes, within their family, the constant deterioration of family and community. The reason why we don't have good family life or good community life, because we don't have a good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. What is the conditions in our community? Are they good or bad? Be honest. Yes, they're bad. What is the conduct towards each other? Is it good or bad? Be honest. Yes, it is bad. You know why? Because we lack consciousness. This is what this program is about, to put something on your mind, to elevate your consciousness, to rid yourself of all the ignorance, stupidity, self-hating and loathing, to make you love yourself, to love one another, to respect your women, to respect your men, to nurture and care for your children, to provide for the elderly who helped you when you couldn't help yourself, and to give honor and reverence to our ancestors. Hard genocide is direct destruction of a people through mass murder. Soft genocide is the indirect destruction of a people by influencing their culture and thus their behavior. For instance, integration was used to destroy revolutionary spirit of African community. And even though there was no such thing to me, as far as I'm concerned, as integration, it was forced and mass assimilation. Some took to the assimilation a lot better than others because they were willing to tell the Caucasian, how you want me to jump? You want me to scratch when there ain't nothing itching? You want me to laugh when ain't nothing funny? You want to rub my head? I'll do anything you want me to do to be unlike those others. The Caucasian world fears African men. And since hard genocide is not viable yet, hard genocide is just killing you outright. It's not viable yet. But understand, we don't have, that's why I'm saying, the revolution that we have and that we must partake in, it is not arms. We don't have no damn arms. We can't meet the military force of Europeans. Nobody on the damn planet can. Well, I take that back. The Chinese can. I don't include Russians. Russians and Caucasians. Russians are Caucasians. Russians are Europeans. Russians are, they're the same shit. The Chinese can. The North Koreans. That's why, to me, Kim Jong-un, I applaud you for not giving up your nukes. You think you're a weirdo, but I applaud you. Because when Muammar Gaddafi gave up his, look what happened. When Saddam Hussein gave up his, look what happened. And Kim Jong-un looked at them and said, that ain't going to be me. I'm going to always deal from a position of strength. The Caucasian world fears African men, and since hard genocide is not viable yet, they understand that the best way to significantly reduce the threat from us is to turn our men into females so they can make themselves into non-threats. Therefore, he has some pictures here. He's showing like a Shaka Zulu and African warriors, and then he's showing the Panthers standing tall with the froze, the tams, the guns, the leather, then to become this. He's showing some integration stuff with dudes with dresses on, with some Caucasians, and one cat looked like, I'm just being real, looked like Will Smith's son. And then, of course, this is, I think that's the one they have a program, they're like cheerleaders or something, I don't know. My expose of the weapons and tactics used by Caucasian extremists is not an attack on homosexuality. After all, there have been many notable gay persons of Pan-African movement, whether we like to admit it or not. And once again, I say, I don't give a damn what your sexual preference is. You keep that to yourself. If you join the movement to liberate for African independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty, that is the primary and only goal. Your sexuality is not an issue. You keep that to yourself. You keep that to the privacy. Once again,
What consenting adults do in the privacy of their own home is their business. Emphasis on consenting, emphasis on adults, and emphasis on even privacy of your own home, period. But we know that there are groups in positions of power and influence who do not have our best interests at heart. And it is our responsibility to expose, understand, and develop strategies to counter their mechanisms, their machineries. One of the parables that we use in the African conscious community to understand how the emasculation of American African men works is the so-called Willie Lynch, so-called, because there was no such thing as a Willie Lynch letter. Willie Lynch, it was made up by one of us, a good brother. Somebody said he made a transition. I don't know about that, but I did see him being interviewed on YouTube or one of that. I see we got some visitors. We got a caller. 646-646. Good morning. Good afternoon.
Oshi, I just wanted to say, what's happening, man?
All right, Jay. I'm doing fine, brother. Let me finish reading this. Let me finish reading this, and I'll be done in the next four minutes, and we'll have conversation.
Yeah,
okay?
Go ahead. I just wanted to say what's happening.
Okay.
Go ahead, finish.
All right. So also, too, we have another caller, and we're going to get to you once I'm done with this piece here. Reverse nature by burning and pulling a civilian Negro apart and bullwhipping the other to the point of death, all in her presence. By her being left alone, unprotected, with the male image destroyed, the ordeal caused her to move from her psychologically dependent state to a frozen independent state. In this frozen psychological state of independence, she will raise her male and female offspring in reverse roles. For fear of the young male's life, she will psychologically train him to be mentally weak and dependent, but physically strong. Because she has become psychologically independent, she will train her female offspring to be psychologically independent. What have you got? You've got a nigga woman out front and a nigga man behind and scared. Continually, though, the breaking of uncivilized Africans by throwing the African female savage into a frozen psychological state of independence, by killing the protective male image, and by creating a submissive, dependent mind of the African male captive, we have created an orbiting cycle axis forever. By doing what they say they're doing and what they have done and continue to do, it is a perpetual cycle forever. And I maintain, if we don't do a damn thing, we break this cycle. The African family has always been the source of strength for the African culture. The African family supports, teaches, protects, and holds its members accountable. To effectively attack and destroy people, this family structure must be undone. In modern times, it has been accomplished by tearing husbands from wives and children from parents during our captivity, removing the man from the household with a new Jim Crow strategy, keeping the African man out of the house with welfare strategies that reward single-parent households, interracial dating, conditioning African children using the public school system to accept the state of sovereignty of household, using welfare to reinforce dependency on the state instead of the family unit, infiltrating the African culture to deliver subliminal psychological attacks. And since we understand that these strategies have been employed to destroy African families, we should be actively and collectively working to counter them. Don't ask, don't tell, because I don't want to know. It's no secret that the military has its fair share of gay men and women. For years, the official policy was don't ask, don't tell. Nobody cares what you got into your behind closed doors as long as it didn't affect the mission accomplished. Gay service members didn't put their sexuality on Front Street. They didn't need to. It was nobody's business. So why is it so necessary for gay men and women to put what they do with their bodies on blast? I like having my nipples pinched when I'm doing my thing. Does that mean I go around wearing a shirt with cut out nipple holes? No. Sexuality is between me and my queen, nobody else.
The gay agenda has become a weapon of mass destruction. Promoting the agenda of a group of people that only represent 4.5% of the U.S. population is a distraction from the microscopic issues of the other 95%. By prioritizing LGBTQ issues over African issues, we risk losing our hard-fought gains to a group of people that would rather identify with their sexual orientation over their blood ancestry. I fully triggered LBG community flag bearers to misinterpret the title of this article and its intent and jump right into the comments section. While this article is not about homosexuality or homosexual gender, it is worth mentioning that gay rights is not a new civil rights movement. Gays aren't being denied basic rights. They can vote, sit on any public toilet, go to a college, get married, thanks to Obama, and get great jobs. Recent polls have suggested gay couples actually earn more than straight couples. In fact, the only people discriminating against gay people are other gays. This is not an issue here. The issue is clear and present danger that the reversal of gender roles is having on our children. The destruction of healthy family structures will represent both male and female gender roles. The destruction from the real issues and values we should be embracing to build our culture and our nation. The successful conclusion of the destruction of African men and African civilization. With all the weapons that they have formed against the African diaspora, we would do well to be on guard and vigilant for any new nefarious and destructive tactics that are being used to seal the deal on our upward mobility as a people. Ashe. Let me take a call here. Good afternoon, caller. Good afternoon, caller. Okay, maybe just want to listen. That's cool. You're free to do so. Good afternoon, Jay. Good afternoon, Jay. 646, good afternoon. Okay, well, maybe stepped away for a minute, but understand, to me, that was an excellent article. Excellent article. Probably read it again sometime. Hey, brother, go ahead, Jay. Go ahead.
Hey, right quick, man. These monkey men are not playing no games.
No, they're not.
In regard to their position in this country, man.
No, they're not.
You know, we don't understand that because we are so busy being played with and taking out of our position in this country, and we don't even understand what our position in this country should be, that now we have these twisted sisters dominating us,
right,
placing us in a vulnerable position, and we just, for some reason, go along with this foolishness. Hey, listen, we better get our act together, man.
We have to. We have to.
We're diminishing our position in this country on a daily basis, and nobody wants to realize it. We really think that we have a position. We really think that we have a say-so in this country and the direction of this country. But no, you are so deadly wrong.
Well,
you are so deadly wrong. We are, in all honesty and truthfulness, we're nothing in this country.
And we never will be, Jay. The bottom line for us is to get out of here. We have to say, the bottom line is that Africans on the continent, Africans in the diaspora, must understand the genocidal attack that has been on us for now hundreds of years and say no more. Africans on the continent must come together on the continent with Africans in the diaspora who have expertise to run our continent, to run our resources, to develop a collective, just as Dr. Diop, Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop did, Kwame Nkrumah, Patrice Lumumba, and I could go on, and even many men and women of today. We understand that only through a pan-African world structure that African people will survive. Because what the Caucasian is trying to do is eliminate us in various methods. He has gone to Africa and told Africans, if you do not accept homosexuality, we will not give you any funding. We will not build anything in your country. Basically holding them hostage. You know, forcing this particular destructive lifestyle. I have no problems. I have family members that are homosexual. I'm cool with them. They're cool with me. I don't bother them. And they sure in hell better not bother me. But I'm not promoting their lifestyle. That is their choice. I'm not promoting it. I'm not going to denigrate them. I guess they felt that was something that they chose to do. And it is a choice. That has been proven. There is no homosexual gene that will make you homosexual. There is none. Science says that. I mean, if there's some more science that says something different, then present it. But you know what, Jay? I don't give a damn. Because what's most important to me is that African people learn to live and strive and survive together. Men and women, families, children, elderly, honoring the elders, respecting and revering our ancestors. Like I said, the brother whose wife gave me my name at a naming ceremony back in the 80s, he lived here until he made his transition, Brother Nanahochi. And what he said in an article, he said, I have studied multiple African civilizations and African societies, and nowhere is there homosexuality in those societies an issue. And to me, if there was somebody homosexual, he or she knew to keep that to themselves, to keep it on a real down low or in a real closet. And so be it. I'm not asking for people to come out and say, you know, we're fighting for self-determination and liberation and sovereignty. But we're also fighting for gay rights. Hell no.
Well, you know, anytime you fight for somebody else's culture and devalue your own culture, something fundamentally wrong with you. But for some reason, we don't seem to realize that or even take that into consideration in our development as a people. Listen, Oshi, in the next 30 to 50 years, if we don't get our act together,
yep, we're gonna be gone.
We're gonna be distinct.
Yeah.
We'll be like the dinosaur.
Yep, exactly, Jay. We'll be in a museum.
And you know what the thing is? You know what the thing is, Oshi? We don't even think on those type of terms,
right,
necessary for us to be able to understand what's happening to us.
Right.
That's the frustrating thing. That's the thing that annoys me the most is, it's like, we don't get it, bro. It's like, we really think that everything is cool with this removal. Yeah. We think that we're evolving into a nation. I mean, when you hear these niggas on television talk about so-called black people's position in this country, and that we're the ones who will determine who's going to become the next president.
That don't mean a damn thing. Hey, listen, Jay, you know I got to go. I got to make way. Jay, I got to make way for Brother Franklin. But you know what? I always appreciate the conversation. If you can get a chance to give him a call on Wednesday, please do so, dear brother. Have a blessed day, Jay. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the MIND, but the MINE, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahoria. Bibi Fahoria means our victorious destiny. Bibi Fahoria family, have a wonderful day. Peace.